Welcome to Two Book Minimum, where it's okay to put a book down if you're just not feeling it. I'm Monica Fumarolo. Now that we are solidly in January, I first of all wanted to say thank you to the people who listened or at least downloaded my last episode. I'm seeing things from New York, Stockholm, Germany, Canada. Y'all warm my little librarian heart, and it's exciting to see that maybe people are listening because I definitely feel like I'm just shouting into the void. Today, I am going to be doing a matchup of two books. They are two books in a duology, The Cerulean Chronicles by T.J. Clune. The first book, The House in the Cerulean Sea, came out in 2020, and its sequel, Somewhere Beyond the Sea, came out in 2024. To start, in book one, Linus Baker is an utterly ordinary man. He lives alone with his cat, he has very little in his life outside of his job, and his job is just one that manages to highlight how incredibly beige his life is. He works as a government caseworker, a small cog in a big machine known as the Department in Charge of Magical Youth. His role is to oversee the well-being of residences at orphanages exclusively for magical children, in a country where to be anything but human is to be extremely prejudiced against. No one is more surprised then when extremely upper management, that's all uppercase, plucks Linus from obscurity in his little desk and sends him on a highly classified assignment, spending a month at the Marsyas Island orphanage and to determine if it should remain open. What makes this orphanage so different and dangerous compared to the other ones? It is home to a gnome, a sprite, a wyvern, an unidentified species of green blob, a shapeshifter, and the Antichrist. Yes, those six children are almost nothing, though, compared to their charming caretaker, Arthur Parnassus. This book came out during the pandemic and was something that got a lot of buzz even while people were stuck home alone and seeking connection. Nothing speaks quite to isolation like six children and their caretaker being on an island that can only be accessed by a grumpy ferryman. Have you ever wanted to give a book a hug? Or felt like a book gave you a hug? I've read this book now twice, and I think I actually liked it even more the second time around, because I knew what was coming my way. Each and every character to grace these pages is so clearly the protagonist of their own story, from our main crew of eight to others who maybe only show up for a line or two. Clune has built a world among his characters, and it is so richly realized and beautiful. My first read was in 2021, pandemic raging, and it felt all too appropriate to read a story showing how cruel people can be, as well as highlighting the potential for the best of us. What impressed me perhaps the most of all is that despite all of the magical creatures and the presence of Satan's son, here the bad guy is society, its prejudice, its evolving norms and the people unwilling to accept them. And perhaps the thing that makes it particularly sinister is that these actions are all too common and even acceptable to some. And it's all the more heartbreaking that in this particular story, all that anger and hatred is being directed at children. And unfortunately, I can think of too many examples where that is also the case in reality right now. But like I said, this book is also full of tremendous hope and kindness and decency and caring and understanding. And it shows a multitude of love's many forms. There's communal love, sibling love, romantic love, love of a place, and what makes something a home. As a teacher, I loved how each of the island's wards was so complete and distinct with their own individualized hopes and dreams. And I have a particular soft spot for Chauncey, who is the green blob character I mentioned before. He has dreams of being a bellhop, and it's been a long time since my own dreams felt so simple and pure and attainable. Never mind the fact that everyone outside of his immediate circle at first is shouting that what he wants is too big, too impossible, too ridiculous. It doesn't matter. The ones who love him and who he loves in return are an incredible rock of a support system, and it's just so beautiful to remember how this is how the world changes when those small groups of people band together and eventually their voices become louder than the angry, ugly ones. I'm always highly skeptical whenever a book is a standalone for a really long time and then an previously unannounced, unplanned sequel comes out later. So I was very nervous, but also excited at the idea of a sequel. Would it be as good? Would there be tons of retcon? Would Clune take back what he had said before? Only time would tell. And now, since we're talking about book two, Somewhere Beyond the Sea, you are officially being warned. There might be some slight spoilers ahead, but mostly I'm just going to be talking about vibes. But still, if you want to be careful, cover your ears, hit pause, come back to this later. When we rejoin our cast in Somewhere Beyond the Sea, it has been several months since the conclusion of the previous book. And while life on Marseilles Island continues to be idyllic and as chaotic as ever, even more changes come when Arthur Parnassus is summoned to give government testimony. Opening up about his horrific past is trying enough, but it's complicated even further by a powerful politician and her coalition of small-minded followers determined to outlaw the very existence of Arthur and his six, hopefully soon to be seven, magical children. Linus Baker once changed his mind. The town of Marsyas is coming around. But how much can a single man endure? While the metaphor in book one about others wanting to be accepted and needing to be loved just as much as any other member of society is clear, the messaging in this book is much more heavy-handed in its political allegory. My main thought when I was reading this one was just, I was excited, I was interested, but I also feel that given the optimistic finale of book one, it's important to talk about book two with the context in which it was written. Basically, unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably heard that transgendered people, particularly transgendered youth, are being the targets of laws. And that has been not just an issue in the United States, but certainly something being talked about in the wider world. So TJ Clune also heard about this, and as a member of the LGBTQ community himself, felt the need to respond to the way in which these people, these children in particular, were being targeted, particularly these transgender youth. So is the first book political? Yes. Is the second book political with a capital P? Also, yes. There is no room for, I don't want to say there's no room for nuance, but you couldn't imagine your way around it, even if you wanted to. And I applaud Clune for going at this story head on and taking it on in a way and in a world where it would be all too easy to sweep it under the rug. And just like the first book is focused on how Linus comes around to change his mind, this book highlights how not everyone is a Linus and how can we persevere and be hopeful and be caring, mindful, loving community members to all of the people of this world, even though there are people who are staunchly against that very idea. So that is the context of this book. And I have to say, this book, compared to the first one, is apples and oranges. It's just different. What I will say I really liked is how Clune went deeper with all of the characters. Book one focused a lot on Lucy, Lucifer, and I would say our garden gnome. And in this one, we get to spend a lot more time with Theodore and with David, who is potentially going to be a new member of this family. And it just shows how adolescence is a beautiful, ugly, messy, wonderful, weird time. Book one is childhood. Book two is puberty. And I loved that because it's not too often anymore where I feel like you get a series of books where people actually grow up. It seems like, especially since I am often reading books meant for younger people, there are plenty of series where a main character is forever a seventh grader, despite the fact that we're 14 books in. It's either the longest school year in the world or that's just the sweet spot and what the author is going for. And that's fine. But I loved seeing the evolution and change and growth with this group of kids and how they're coming to think things for themselves and have their own ideas and even challenge their parents in respectful, loving ways. But also, they're not just going to accept things because you tell them to. And I think that's an even bigger sort of moral of this story, is that there are a lot of people in the world who believe things because others in power have told them that's what they should believe. But there's certainly a power in taking in the information and thinking and believing for yourself. This novel comes with an agenda, but really, what book doesn't? It made me curious. It made me think. It made me laugh. It made me wince. It made me wonder. Both of these books are accompanied by a wonderful 50s and 60s kind of soundtrack. If the title of the second one didn't give it away, it is definitely a nod to the Bobby Darin song. So I would say, in a word, these books are charming, but don't let that initial sheen or colorful cover fool you. They do go deep. They do not shy away from the harder questions, but at the same time, I do feel that they broach them in an approachable way. However, with all due respect to TJ Klune, I don't know if my soul could take a book three. So maybe just a duology is fine as it is. So that's it for me for now. If you like this kind of episode where I'm taking on series, I hope you stick around. That is my plan for the foreseeable future. And I do have some other beloved series to me lined up in the notebook. If you liked what you heard today, like, subscribe, tell your friends, or just download it. You don't even have to listen to it. I'll just take what I can get. May you find a story out there that speaks to you. And until next time, happy reading.